Hello, everybody, and welcome to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. It is 6:08, rainy outside.
Yes.
You think it's ever going to stop raining? Well, I'd rather it rain than snow. I'm not going
to
lie.
Because I think it's like 1 inch of rain is equal to 12 inches of snow or something like that.
So definitely way rather have the rain.
Good thing I spent all weekend cutting everything back in my yard and all that kind of stuff. I'm a hurting girl.
Yeah, well, you're ready for the winter now.
Yeah, I guess. I cleaned up the sidewalk so that when I go to shovel snow, I can just run that snow shovel up and down instead of hitting stuff all the time. So that was my reason for doing it right there.
Well, that's the best thing. You're ready for it. The snow's probably going to be coming soon anyway. We can't have this nice warm winter that's that long. It's going to be nasty. It's going to come hard.
That's what I'm thinking, too. Well, the woolly worms are all black, so
yeah,
that means bad weather.
It's bad juju.
Yeah.
Give us a call, 304-214-1600. If you're out of the area, call us toll-free, 1-866-514-1600. I'm Jordan Klein. She's Lola Miller. Sarah Howard's going to be in here in a little bit. She's faxing something for me. We got a special event. Well, we don't have it. Our first guest, his name's Steve Hummel, is going to be talking about a paranormal event that he's got coming up. He's started it. Got a lot of guests and speakers. I think he's got some vendors. It's going to be a really good time. Steve, are you with us?
Yeah, what's up?
What's going on, man?
Not too much.
Tell us about your event.
Okay, the event is December 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It is a paranormal convention at the Wells Inn in Sistersville, West Virginia. It is geared for people that have already been into ghost hunting, a good bit, and also it's geared for people who are curious or wanting to get into it. There will be seminars, there will be investigations, there will be a historic walk. I believe, tentatively, will be on Saturday. And on Sunday at 7, there will also be a concert for people who paid for the daily admission.
What kind of concert? Who's playing?
It'll be No Promise of Tomorrow. It's a metal. It's a heavy metal band. Very, very good. I went through some of their demos with my friend Ryan. He highly recommended them, and they sound very, very good. I think people will be very pleased with them.
Okay, so you got the paranormal event. Tell us some of the speakers that you got.
Okay, on Saturday at 3 o'clock will be Terra Siempa. At 5 o'clock will be Scott Crownover along with his partner, Patty Wilson. She is a paranormal novelist.
Tara Siempa, she's the Paranormal Magazine?
Yes.
We had her on the show.
She's a lot of
great,
fun.
Oh, great, great, great.
She's a lot of fun.
Yeah, she'll be there at 3.
We actually, fun story real quick. Her show, when we had her on the air, I got my nastiest hate mail during that show because...
That's nothing new, Steve, but it was her.
It was right before the first issue of her magazine came out, and I was just making a joke, and I was like, "Is your magazine right or left leaning?" And I got the nastiest hate mail of how ignorant I was. That I thought it was funny. I had a good time with it, and like I laughed at the hate mail. But I think it's on iTunes if anybody wants to go out there and check it out. Yeah, it's talking about how small minded and. How I listened to Rush Limbaugh on the way to the studio because I asked.
That's funny.
All right, what other? Who else do you have as a speaker?
Well, that's Saturday. Sunday at 3 is going to be Gary Kanji. He's very popular from the Pittsburgh area.
Okay.
Was affiliated with Hillview Manor up in Newcastle, PA. 5 o'clock on Sunday is going to be Mystic, PA. His name's Mike. It'll also be Paranormal Quest. I'm actually a member of Paranormal Quest. It's a TV show project we're working on. We're going to be going over Mike's equipment that he builds. This stuff is awesome.
Paranormal Quest. That's a, have we had the, somebody from I that think, on the show before?
I think so.
Paranormal Quest sounds really familiar.
Yeah.
It was either myself, Steve, Dave, or Ryan. I'm not sure. But we're we have a Studio 724 looking at us to pick us up for an internet internet TV channel, I guess you'd say.
All right.
And we've got two seasons waiting for them, for what, so whenever we get it ready to go, which I'm looking forward to because Ryan just texted me about 5 minutes before you called, saying he's got some good news for us. So
that sounds good to me.
That takes off from it.
Well, definitely, if that hooks up, we're going to have you guys back or on here, back on here, however you want to say it. Talk about what's going on with that.
Yeah, and then 7 o'clock Sunday's the concert. So,
well, it sounds like a good time. How do people get tickets?
Right now we're doing at the door. It's the easiest way right now. November 28th, however, is the deadline for people who want to do a booth, or they can do it as a vendor, or they can do it for their group to promote their group. That's $25. And that will admit two people for all 3 days for the booth. If anyone else from the group or from the vendor would want to be registered underneath of that, it's only $5 extra per person, and that admits that person for all 3 days. They have to be registered first and last name, of course, prior to and including on November 28th.
Sounds like a pretty affordable convention. How much are tickets?
$10 at the door. And we're going to have...
Well, usually they're like $50.
Right. We've been really fortunate with the first year. The guy that owns the Wells Inn, Charles, he made it basically where we're working together with it. So I didn't have a rental fee as an overhead. So I was able to make it affordable for people to enjoy the first convention. And I plan on it being an annual thing. I've got a couple locations for next year I'm looking at. I'm looking at the Anchorage in Marietta or possibly the former state penitentiary in Moundsville. So it might cost a little bit more then, but we'll worry about that down the road.
Well, let me give you a bit of encouragement, even, you know, because we try to do an annual ghost hunt, and this year, because of several unforeseen circumstances, we were unable to do that. But
right.
Don't give up. Because, you know, it's worth it, and it's just going to take some, you know, hit or miss.
Oh, yeah.
You know, even if you miss a year, you know, you still keep it up, and that just means the next year is going to be even better because you had 2 years to plan it.
I think we're already looking at probably an average right now, 60 to 70 people.
Nice.
I already planned about 20. I was kind of glad to go with a small venue so that way people can enjoy the more one-on-one camaraderie, and I can also work out the bugs on the same note.
Now, that building that it's in... Doesn't that have is that a haunted inn?
Oh, the Wells Inn, yes. The Wells Inn is actually ranked, I believe now, last time I checked, I believe now, though, it's ranked in the top 10 most haunted places in West Virginia.
That's what I thought that's the one it was.
Yeah. And we're trying to work it out to where we can have an entire floor for people to investigate on. And so far, that's looking good. If not, we're going to run it as a workshop investigations where... We'll have like the top 3 to 4 most haunted rooms or active rooms, including the wooden derrick, which is the pub in the basement.
Yeah.
Paranormal Quest has actually investigated the Wells Inn as one of their episodes for PQ, and we've got some great evidence out of there. And we'll be doing the Wells Inn and the Gaslight Theater presentation on Friday to show people a little bit of what we got.
What kind of evidence did you get there? You give us a hint?
We got
full body apparitions that came and grabbed somebody, threw them across the room.
Not quite that. Not on that episode. No.
We'll talk it up. You'll get more ticket sales.
Okay.
It was horrendous. I had nightmares. 7 people died. Come.
Yeah, it was horrible. It was, you know, blood everywhere. No. It was a great investigation, and we were kind of limited on it, but it worked out. It worked out very well.
Okay, do you have a website, anything? You have a Facebook.
It's on Facebook right now.
Give the Facebook address. Say that again? You kind of broke up.
Earthbound Paranormal Convention.
Earthbound Paranormal Convention on Facebook. Look
right.
it up.
And if not, they can look that up. Or there's a project I'm working on where the Earthbound Paranormal Convention will be kind of hosted underneath of a museum project I'm working on for a local area. I'm working on a paranormal museum. And pretty soon, they'll be able to go to Archive of the Afterlife and then look up Earthbound Paranormal Convention underneath of that.
That sounds really good. Check it out on Facebook. Get in touch with Steve at Steve Hummel. Friend him, ask him questions, grill him about everything that's going on.
Yeah, be Steven with a PH, if they have trouble finding it. It might not show up under Steve Hummel.
Or just everybody go to Steve's gym in Moundsville.
That'll work.
See, there's another plug.
There you go.
Steve, thank you very much for sharing that with us. Hopefully we can get you some people your way. Maybe we can even make it away. Can you give the dates again?
December 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Each day will start. It'd be good to get there about 2 or 2:30 because the events will start at 3. So it's good to get there early, get your bearings, and meet everybody. The vendors, the booths, and whatnot will all be there.
And tickets at the door.
Yes. Everything excluding food and lodging is included in the daily admission.
All right, do you have food vendors there?
Actually, Charles is going to handle that because he's got the whole kitchen at the Wells End.
Oh, okay. Wow.
He'll be ready to go with that.
Well, that's good.
And I highly recommend the fish and chips.
All right, Steve, thank you very much. And
all right, thank you, sir.
We'll be in touch again about maybe giving some tickets away.
All right, you got it.
Okay, thanks. All right, see you, Steve.
All right, thank you.
That sounds pretty fun. You want to go, Lola?
That'd be a lot of fun.
That's a weekend trip.
Yeah. Yeah, that it is.
We might be able to pull it off.
We just might.
Oh.
Before we get Mac on.
You need to take a little break?
Yeah, we need to take one break this hour. So
okay, well, let's go ahead and take the break now, and then we can just
be
all Mac all the time.
Okay.
All right, listen to Whispers Radio. Stay tuned after the break. We have Mac Maloney, his book, UFOs in Wartime, What They Didn't Want You to Know. I read through it. It's really neat.
Oh,
it's going to be fun.
Snoopy and Red Baron went at it. I'm sorry.
Red Baron and a UFO.
Funny.
All right, you're listening to Whispers Radio. We'll be right back.
Pulling out at first dawn's light.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Whispers Radio here on AM 1600 WKKX, the Valley's Watchdog, and UPRN, the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Sorry about the long intro music.
Stuff?
As soon as I picked the headphones up, the half of the headphones just fell out on the floor.
It's that padding.
Yeah.
I know.
I didn't want to put it directly on because sometimes there'll be some static going on and I'll get zapped right through both of my ears. I figure the padding might save me from going deaf.
Yeah, you have to remember that's metal. Yeah. That your glasses are metal.
I'm just starting getting zapped here. Hello, everybody!
Well, at least he'll be in a good mood because that's, electroshock therapy. Really?
He would be in a good mood after that.
Hey!
Hello, my name's Jordan.
All right, our guest tonight is Mr. Mac Maloney. UFOs in Wartime. Mac, you with us?
Yes, I am.
Now, I was telling Lola a little bit about the Red Baron part from your book,
uh-huh.
And she's just having a giggle fest because she thinks Snoopy.
Yes, I do. And the fact that, those planes back in World War I threw hand grenades out of the cockpits for bombs. I'm having a hard time believing that the Red Baron could actually, a bullet would even pierce a UFO.
Well, it's a story that I came upon, in the research that I did for the book, and I brought it to the attention of my editor, and I we did talk a little bit about whether we should put it in or not, and he said, that's just too good to leave out.
I agree with that. It is a good story, but, I just have pictures of Snoopy running through my brain,
Well, the Red Baron was, he was the top fighter ace for the German Air Force in World War I. He shot down over 80 planes before he himself was shot down. And you know, whether this UFO that he shot down was one of the 80 confirmed combat kills, we don't know. But it was a story that came from his wingman. They were just on combat air patrol one day and saw this strange craft coming at them. The United States had just got into the war. Their first thought, their only thought was that this had to be some kind of a secret weapon that the Americans had. So they shot at it and hit it, and it crashed into the woods. They saw two occupants running from the crash. They went back to their base and landed and told their superiors what had happened, and the superiors told them, don't ever say anything about this again. And his wingman, you know, kept that promise until the late 40s when he started hearing stories about flying saucers, and he realized that that was the shape of the object they saw that day. And he really kept it to himself all those years until he gave an interview to a British tabloid right before he passed away.
That really is an interesting story because, you know, when you take into account everything else that you said, you know, maybe it was. And, you know, it is, back then, I don't know that they would be expecting flying machines that could actually do any damage to them.
I agree with you.
Well, they didn't expect, like, how do I say it? Like, they didn't know, oh, yeah, it's aliens, it's aliens. I mean, back in that time, did they even... Because that's before, you know, like the big flying saucer invasion in like the 40s, 50s.
That's right. There was, you know, a lot of people think that, and people I've talked to since, you know, I was working on the book, one of the things that I found out is that you know, in 1947 is when the term flying saucer came to be. And that was when Kenneth Arnold, now a famous story, flying over Mount Rainier that summer saw... these unidentified flying objects, and his quote was, they look like saucers skipping across a lake, and the media got a hold of that and turned that into flying saucers, and that's how we got the term flying saucers. But actually, unidentified flying objects have been seen all throughout history. They're reported in the Bible, as I'm sure you know. There were reports of UFOs affecting battles by Alexander the Great. And
yeah, that's an interesting one, too, if you want to tell that story.
Well, you know...
The flying shields?
Right. We went back to try to include as much information as we could, and we just kind of put it out there and let people decide, okay? And what the story is, Alexander the Great was about 300 B.C. He was in the process of conquering the known world, and he was... At a point where he was going to attack parts of Persia, he came to this river crossing, and now he had a huge army, a lot of men on foot, but also they had horses and they had war elephants. Well, just as they're about to cross this river, these, as they described the men as silvery shields with fire spitting from their rim, show up and started kind of buzzing over his army, and it freaked out the horses and the elephants to the point where they refuse to cross the river. So now we have an instance where UFOs is actually changing the course of what could have been a historic battle. Later on, Alexander and his army found themselves down in what is now Lebanon, and they were attacking a city called Tyre. And what that was the occupants had built a city out in the harbor, and Alexander had surrounded it, and he was building causeways out into the water so he could attack the walls of the city. Just as he was about to do that, the silver shields show up again, and two of them fire some kind of ray at the walls. It destroyed the walls, and Alexander's army was able to go in and take over the city. And here's an example of the UFOs helping him and actually kind of changing the course of history. So it's two pretty interesting stories from 300 B.C.
Now, I got a question. Do you think... Because in this situation, you know, they were, you know, assisting. You know, do you think that they are just kind of watching, I guess, to check whether or not we're sophisticated enough, I guess? Are they trying to gear us in a certain direction? Are they gauging us for battle themselves? What's your take?
You know, it could be all of that and none of that. I don't know what it is. I do know that there are instances that where it seems like they show up to change the course of history. It does seem sometimes they show up to, you know, help one side against another, but the vast majority of the research that we did in what appears in the book is that they seem to be watching us. They seem to take a special interest in us when we're about to go to war and when we are at war. And my personal conclusion is, for some reason, they're very interested in watching us as we kill each other.
They're up there saying, look at these guys. What are they doing?
Right, exactly. But time and time again, we do about 70 different episodes in the book, and I mean 70 different sections spread out over a number of chapters. And there are stories, anecdotes that we've got in the research, and the vast majority of them are where, you know, for instance, during World War II, Obama crews bombing Nazi Germany in the middle of bombing runs, as fighters, German fighters, are shooting at them, as anti-aircraft, guns are shooting at them. They'll see flying saucers. They'll see what were called Foo Fighters back then.
Okay, yeah.
Looking in on us as we're at war with each other. I think it's very interesting and also very mystifying.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, I don't like adults watching children at play. You're not going to intercede unless, you know, something really drastic, and in this case, maybe nuclear holocaust. But, you're just kind of the observer, just watching to see which kid's going to come out on top.
Right. Another comparison is, it's funny because when I'm writing, I have a TV in my office, and the TV is always on with the sound turned down, and I really don't watch it that much, and usually it's on the military channel or the Discovery Channel or something. But for some reason, when I was doing this book, I was watching a lot of the Animal Planet, I guess what it was. And they're constantly showing things going on in Africa and on the Serengeti and things like that. And it dawned on me one day, you know what this is like? This is like when we go on a safari. Look what happens. Suppose if you would want a safari to Africa, what would happen? You would leave where you are now. You would fly to Africa. They'd put you on a truck. They'd bring you out onto the Serengeti. You would watch, lions attacking gazelles. You would see, crocodiles doing their thing. You would see all these animals. You would see them interacting. They would see you. They would see you in the truck, but they wouldn't have any concept of what a tourist was, what a safari is, what a truck is. They see you, but they can't understand you, so they just go about your business, their business. Kind of the same way.
Hopefully it's not a hunting safari. It's when they they watch you kill each other, and then they get you, you know?
And then it's let's say a tourist safari. But then there are instances where these people go out and they shoot these animals with tranquilizing guns to study them, and that's close to what the abduction theory is about. So for some reason, I just thought, maybe these people are... Maybe these beings are time travelers or something. They're coming back here, and this is their way of seeing history unfold right before their eyes.
Kind of just watching history happen.
Yep.
Huh, we got a caller.
Yes, we've got a question for you. This is Hank.
Hank, how you doing?
Fine, sir. Hey, if anybody has a doubt about the veracity of these UFO sightings, I hope they saw the, what the National Press Club is?
Uh-huh.
In D.C., that's where they have noted speakers from around the world come in. Well, this day they had generals from foreign air forces, some Americans, who have seen these UFOs, and they came in and they gave their stories, and I'm telling you, they were very believable. My question for you is, how do you think animal mutilations tie into this? And I'll listen to your answer online.
Thanks, Hank.
We did not get into animal mutilations. There was a lot of things that we looked over, but what we really wanted to do was really present as many cases as we could that showed that during times of war or times leading up to war, that UFOs, whatever they are, were paying attention to us. I've heard a lot of theories about the animal mutilations. Obviously, something is going on there, but we just didn't deal with it in this particular book. But I know exactly what he was talking about, the call was talking about previously, the National Press Club, where they brought in, and on one occasion, they brought in pilots from, there was even a pilot there from the Iranian Air Force.
Really?
And there have been hundreds, probably even thousands of encounters between military aircraft and UFOs, and the vast majority of them have been hushed up. I mean, the American government, since 1947, has made a concerted effort to hush up any encounters that their fighter pilots have with UFOs, and they know, if we know, they know that if, you know, when war is about to happen or when war is on, that UFO sightings spike.
Now, do you think that they get approached by the, you know, quote-unquote men in black?
You mean the military pilots and
yes.
so on? I don't think they necessarily have to be the men in black. I think that, you know, each branch of the military has its own investigative service. And I think that they had just, you know, sat down. Well, I know people, I've talked to people where it's happened. I know somebody who was in the Air Force, and they made a sighting down at an air base in Charleston, South Carolina. The UFO came right down on top of them late one night. They're working out on the flight line and hovered over them. They could feel the heat from it. The UFO eventually disappeared. There were three individuals. They told their superiors. The superiors locked them in a room, and civilians came in, and all they did was ask them the same questions over and over and over again for 3 days. Until finally, at the end of 3 days, you're going to say anything. And so what they did was they signed a statement saying that what they saw was a reentry vehicle from something that had been launched at Cape Canaveral. That's how, and then they tell you, don't talk to anyone about this ever again. And, you know, luckily most people in our military are loyal and they're patriotic, and they do what they're told. But the result is that there are many, many, many UFO military encounters that have happened in this country and in other countries. We'll never hear about them.
Well, I think a year or so ago, we had the guy from Canada. He was the Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, and he was talking about, oh, yeah, everybody knows that the U.S. is working with the extraterrestrials, and they... Do you remember that conversation?
Yeah, I do.
You know, I would in a way, I would love for that to be the case. I didn't really see any evidence of something like that. I've heard there are lots of stories around like that. You know, my problem with that is that, you know, we hear that maybe that UFOs have been recovered and that they've been reverse engineered and things along those lines, and Velcro is supposedly from a UFO and all that. You know, my question with that is, if that was the case, would we really go through this whole charade of NASA launching space shuttles, very expensive, a very inefficient way of getting things into orbit? Why would we go through all that if we had this reverse engineered technology?
Just don't understand it yet.
At our fingertips. That could be.
But if
the U.S. government is talking to, you know, is actually sitting down and talking to aliens, they must look at the space shuttle like we would look at a Model T.
All right, Mac. Everybody knows I am a conspiracy theorist, you know, to the max. Money. NASA is big money. Space industry is big money. And just because, and I believe this across the board with corporations, just because they have a better, more efficient, and probably less expensive way of doing things, they're not going to do it if it means cutting into their profits.
That's true. I agree with you 100%. And the fact is, too, is that a lot of the industries that work for NASA are actually also our weapons industries.
Yeah.
They're joined at the hip. And I agree with you that the way things are in this country these days, and the fact that the government and big business and Wall Street are so connected, that nothing, as you say, they will do nothing if it means cutting into their profits.
Yeah.
So even if it means keeping the biggest secret, you know, in all of humanity from us, they would do it if for some reason it would affect it. They would keep the secret if it would keep their bottom line intact. I agree with you.
I'm so glad, because some people look at me like I'm nuts for thinking that way, but I really do. It's all about money. It's all about
all
greed.
About money these days. Yeah. It's sad, but it's true.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I totally most government war related. It's because, you know, if you said it's all the weapons things too.
Right.
You know, now how much of that do you think plays in? And let me, I guess, get weird in my own way. You know, if the UFOs are always showing up around wartime, you know, before, during, you know, that time, and then our own space program is pretty much funded by the weapons, you know, stuff. Do you think that the UFOs are extraterrestrial, or do you think that we're testing out our own stuff? And like Lola said, NASA is just kind of like a front, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that a lot, not a lot, but I think that many things that people see in the sky could very well be top secret aircraft that the Air Force is testing or the U.S. government is testing. That's always been the case. People who saw the F-117 stealth fighter before anyone knew about it, they would see that flying through the air, and of course it's a UFO. Same thing with the B-2 Spirit bomber. I mean, you know, if you see one of those flying over, I happened to see one flying over a house a few years ago, and if you didn't know that that was a stealth bomber, what else would you think it was? Yeah. You would think that it was some kind of a UFO. And also, I spoke to a pilot who used to who flew in Red Flag, which is the kind of like the Air Force's Top Gun, and they fly over Nevada, and they fly in and around the airspace of Area 51. And what he told me, he says, you always got to remember something. Keeping something top secret costs a lot of money. Okay, it costs a lot of money. So when they declassify things like the B-2 bomber and the stealth fighter, when they let the public see that, the only reason they're doing that is that it means that there's something else they're holding back top secret-wise. Now, last year, in 2010, the black ops budget for this country was over $60 billion.
Wow.
$60 billion. You know, the vast majority of that, we will never find out what that has been spent on. That's a lot of money to spend. And plus, this year they probably got just as much or more. That's a budget that is never cut. You never hear it talked about. It's never cut. So there's a lot of secrets out there. There's a lot of secret stuff out there flying around. But is it all our stuff? I don't think so. I think that there's definitely something else happening. And, of course, how do we account for UFO sightings back in the 1900s?
Yeah.
And back in biblical times?
Well, if I remember right in your story, there was also George Washington.
Right. That was another story. Once again, you know, we said, boy, this, are we going to put this in or not? But my editor said, you know, put it in because it's too good to leave out, and there's, you know, been a couple stories floating around out there that when George Washington was at Valley Forge and at the very low point of the American Revolution, that he was given, you know, aid by a what they thought was a tribe of Indians called the Greenskins, where, you know, they gave them food and supplies and so on, and what some writings say is that they lived in a lodge that was round and that sometimes was there, sometimes wasn't. So, you know, that has led some people to believe that this quote-unquote lodge was actually a flying saucer and that these people may have been occupants of a UFO helping out George Washington. So once again, there's an instance where, you know, possibly UFOs were affecting the outcome of the history of our country.
I believe it's in it's John Keel's book.
Yeah.
He was talking about West Virginia itself and a state, and he said that a lot of Indians, like the Indian tribes, only went around the edge, like, but deep in the core of West Virginia, there wasn't a lot of Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it was, like, that not even, like, it was supposed to be so unholy land that not even Indians wanted to have anything to do with it. But
mm-hmm.
if you go back into the Indian writings, there's a, there was a pale tribe with, like, big eyes,
mm-hmm.
you know, deep in the heart of West Virginia. And, you know, it kind of goes back with, you know, what you said with Washington, that there was like this, the aliens there.
Right, right, hiding among us, you know, who knows? Yeah, I mean, it's there's many parts of this grand puzzle that, you know, lots of people have been trying to figure out for years and years, and, you know, will we ever know? I asked five UFO researchers that who I was in touch with while I was writing the book, Jerry Clark being one of them, and Dr. Richard Haynes being another, Keith Chester, who wrote the book on Foo Fighters, being another. And at the end of the book, I asked them, when do you think the UFO puzzle will be solved? And the most optimistic answer was from Jerry Clark, and he said, I think within 50 years, the scientific community will actually study UFOs, and then sometime shortly after that, we'll have some kind of an answer. I hope he's off on his timeline. I would like to see it in my lifetime, because I think whatever the answer is, I think it will be a momentous day in human history.
Yeah, because I'm not buying any more of this. You know, they've always used the excuse of, well,
we can't handle it.
We can't handle the truth. And I think at this point in time, it would not be some panicked reaction to any news like that, especially coming directly from governments, you know. And so the only thing I can is comes back to money. It just comes back to money.
Right. I mean, can the American people handle the fact that, you know, we were all swindled by Wall Street and we bailed them out to $1 trillion and things are even worse now than they were 3 years ago? If you can't handle that, if you can handle that, you can handle that what the secret to UFOs might be. And they might not be extraterrestrials. That's the thing. You know that recent petition that they gave to the White House where they asked Obama directly, does he know of any information where the U.S. government has had contact with extraterrestrials? And he had one of his scientific advisors come back and reply, no. We have not had any contact with extraterrestrials. Well, it's my contention that they worded that petition wrong. What they should have said was, has the U.S. government had any contact with intelligent beings other than human beings? Because we don't know if they're from outer space. They could very easily be from inner space. They could be from another dimension. They're probably time travelers. I think they have to go back and reword that. And I agree with you. I think it would take a lot for the U.S. government to come clean about UFOs with us, but I think they should, because we can handle anything these days. Things just, you know.
We've been through a lot as a people.
Yes.
Exactly. You're right. Absolutely right.
Yeah.
You know, we're someone who, we've gone through World War II. We've gone through the worst war ever. We've gone through Vietnam. We've gone through 9/11. We've gone through a lot of these things. They shouldn't treat us like children. If they know something, they should tell us. But I don't think they will.
Well, from your lips to the administration's ear, that's all I can say.
I hope so.
Well, but I'm not. Yeah, I saw his response to that, too, or the administration's response to that petition. And I thought, oh, it's just the same old gobbledygook that they keep throwing out every single time the question is raised. And to me, it's going to take a craft actually, you know, stopping somewhere and making itself known before. And even then, I'm not convinced
that Phoenix.
They would tell us.
The Phoenix Lights, they've like 10,000 people witnessed that.
Oh, but they've come out with a billion different things of what it can be. And yet, every time you try to recreate it, you can't do it. It's not flares floating. It's not, you know, weather balloons. It's not planes from some airfield. You know, but... You know, we'll never get... Well, didn't the governor, though, or the mayor or somebody...
Make a joke out of it?
Yeah, but then recanted.
Then recanted.
Yeah.
Chris Symington was the governor of Arizona, and he came out with someone dressed like an alien. But then when he really, you know, looked into it, he realized that he had made a big mistake. And he was at one of those gatherings they had at the National Press Club just a couple years ago. He was on that panel where they talked about, you know, exactly what UFOs were. Robert Hastings was there. He's the guy... who wrote the book on UFOs incursions on over our ICBM plants, which we deal with a lot in the book. When you have someone who used to be, you know, pretty high up in the political food chain of this country, being the governor, looking into something like that, you know, this is a learned man.
Yeah,
you know,
but here comes my conspiracy thing again, or my my cynicism. He had already lost an election or couldn't run again, you see, and that's when he decided, okay, now I can tell the truth because politically he had nothing left to lose.
Maybe they should give the petition to former presidents.
Yes, that's a thought, because otherwise you're never going to get a politician to admit to something like that. You just won't. You can't even get them to admit to parking in their parking place and not paying for it, so, you know.
Right.
Oh, I'm so cynical. I just hate me sometimes.
but you have every right to be. I feel as you do. We all have a right to be cynical these days because the government has lied to us so often and so many times that how else are you going to be?
Yeah. And that's so sad. that it just it breaks my heart on certain levels to be an American and feel that way.
I agree with you there.
Now, with the little bit of time we have left, I want to talk, because we've been talking about like UFO sightings in wartime and history. Tell us some interesting recent ones.
Well, the book goes from 1909 up to the first Gulf War, and we ended it at the first Gulf War because it just seemed to be the right place to end it. And the most interesting thing about, you know, the Gulf War in 1991, war I'm talking about now, is that if you remember, Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, right. And then there was a six-month period where we were building up our forces in the Middle East, and then finally the war happened in January of 1991. All that time, that those 5 or 6 months before the war actually started, there were just hundreds of UFO sightings over the Middle East. Now, once again, it's because there are more people on the ground. We had almost 500,000 troops in Saudi Arabia. You have a lot of planes flying around. You have a lot of people looking up. But this was not just in the Persian Gulf, but I mean in Egypt, in Jordan, in Israel. Just dozens, hundreds, maybe even thousands of UFOs were spotted leading up to the war. And then when the war started, it continued. We have, you know, a number of episodes in the book, you know, taken from Marines and Army troops on the ground who, during that war and right afterwards, saw things in the sky that they couldn't explain. And once again, it just leads to our premise that when there's a war or when there's about to be a war, lots and lots of UFOs show up, I think, to watch us.
Wow. Do you get a lot of reports from, like, Air Force pilots?
Only off the record.
They can't talk. They're not allowed to talk.
No, off the record. They'll tell you things off the record that will make your head spin.
Like what?
No. Well, I'll tell you one thing someone told me off the record. Well, let me see. I got to make sure I phrase this.
don't give us any names. We don't want the government coming here.
Okay, before 9/11, the way things were, you know, lots of things were picked up on radars coming into this country. And, you know, they most usually turned out to be, airliners whose IFF was broken. Or there was always some kind of a rational explanation for them, and they would not normally scramble jets.
Uh-huh.
After 9/11, now anything that looks unusual coming into this country from any direction, they scramble jets. Okay, so now all of a sudden, after 9/11, you have a lot of jets flying around up there checking out things on radar that, let's say, shouldn't be there. Since that has happened, since 9/11 happened, there have been, this person told me, and they were in a position to know, once again, thousands of encounters between military jets and UFOs, military jets being in the air because we're in a post 9/11 environment, running into things that we can't explain.
Really?
Wow. That's intriguing. That's really interesting. Because if it's following the course that it's always they've kind of followed, they must be anticipating then something really drastic to happen.
Yep. And you know, we'll only find out when it happens.
Yeah.
That's a way to look at it.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, we'll know when they attack.
Well, but you've got Iran sitting there with nuclear capability, and you always have the Indians and the Chinese,
uh-huh.
and you know, in Pakistan at uh-huh. each other's throats, and then North Korea. Who knows what's going on in North Korea?
Uh-huh.
So
that's probably who it is. They're all North Koreans watching us.
You know, who knows? I think when we do find the answer, and like I say, I hope it happens in our lifetimes, let's say, you know,
well, they better hurry up if they want to do it in mine.
No. Think of it this way. It's like on a galactic scale. They're all saying, hey, Jim, come on. The game's about to start. Let's go watch, you know.
It could be just something simple as that.
Now I'm starting
to... history subjects. That's my personal theory. I think that they're people coming back in time to see history unfold before their eyes.
That's bizarre. That's time travel is one thing that really intrigues me.
Sorry to interrupt, but you know, it leads into people always say, well, if there are UFOs, how come you never see this one clear photo of a UFO landing on the lawn of the White House or something? Well, let's say they are time travelers, and they know that we won't know what they are until, let's say, January 15th of 2016. So they know they can do anything up until that date, and we won't know what they are because they already know what our future holds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they can move around with impunity until that particular date, and maybe that's the day that the UFO lands on the front lawn of the White House. But if they're time travelers, a lot of things kind of fit in if they're actually time travelers, and that's my theory. I think they're beings from another time, our future.
Well,
that's a crazy way to look at it.
Yeah, Stephen King's book,
Tommyknockers.
No, the one that just came out deals with that.
About JFK.
Yeah.
Interesting book.
Yep. Wow, this has really been interesting, but the hour is over with, unfortunately. I'll have to have you back on because I love talking about this stuff. And you don't think I'm crazy because I'm so cynical. So.
I'm with you.
He's just as cynical.
Yeah, you got that right.
Mac, where can we get the book?
The book comes out December 6th. It'll be in bookstores everywhere. It's published by Penguin Books. People can go on to Amazon right now and pre-order it. You know, it comes out in print, but also, you know, in digital. So either a book you hold in your hand or on your Kindle. You can pre-order it now, but it will be in the bookstores December 6th.
Awesome. It's exciting. And like I said, I read through it last night because I just got it. We had some mailing issues, but I read through it at work last night, and I was like, yeah, this is good stuff, you know. So definitely pre-order that bad boy. Mac, thank you very much for your time. I've had a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too.
We're going to get back in touch with you because this is a really interesting topic.
Yep.
Okay, anytime. I'd love to do it.
Mac, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it is.
It did go by pretty quick.
Yes, it did.
Next week, we are talking about some Bigfoot. We haven't done a Bigfoot show in a long time.
Not since we... We're offered a free trip. Well,
that's
half
right.
A trip.
Yeah, we're out there, but never return. I wonder if it's the same guy. He said he's been on the show before.
Oh no!
We'll have to ask him.
Where is he from? Oh, you know, like out west. Though it's
we'll
oh,
figure it out.
Oh my! Oh my!
He said, "Hey, I was on the show before. I want to come back on." I was like, "Yeah, sure, let's go. Why not?"
Okay. All right, well, folks, we're going to join the Penguins game. Sid the Kid's back. This is his first game back since last January, and. Because of the concussion issues. Sidney Crosby, you're looking at me like...
No, I knew. Oh, okay. I'm listening intriguingly.
Ah. And it's against, I think, the Islanders, and it is downtown Pittsburgh. But we're going to carry the game live for you, so that's where we're going now.
All right. Until next week, everybody, don't be afraid. Only believe.